Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm magician Nelson Lugo.
Hi, I'm nerdcore rapper Shafer the Dark Lord.
We're best friends
who hate each other's guts.
And we co-host The Epic Podcast,
a monthly show in which we discuss comic books,
video games,
television,
movies,
our debilitating emotional problems,
and Batman.
So much Batman.
That's The Epic Podcast
on the Nerdy Show Podcast Network.
Be safe, internets.
Bye. Seriously, so much Batman.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse.
All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back.
Rules.
Back again. There's a back for every Drag Race franchise or drag show that has happened in the last year. I am Pat DeBear. I am being joined today by Eric.
Hello.
And Brian.
Hi.
And we're doing a drag dive into the glittery abyss that is televised drag nowadays. There is so much that is going on, that has gone on, that will be coming up over the course of just pretty much every day. Like, honestly, just about every day you can turn to a channel or a streaming service and watch drag performers and artists just lighting up your television screen. And we are going to talk about them. We are not going to really do a specific deep dive onto any particular program or season, I should say. We are going to just kind of give our thoughts on some of the drag that has been happening. We will talk about some of the drag programs that are currently airing. And we will cap off our chat today with a little first feelings, thoughts, opinions of Drag Race Season 14, which the cast was just announced about a week before we are recording here today, and then premieres on January 7th. 2022. Dear Lord, I cannot believe it is almost 22.
I have I have two very important questions about this whole thing we need to talk about. First of all, do we believe we have reached peak Drag Race content? Or is there going to be a year where we have even more than we did this year? And second, I think more importantly, do we think that RuPaul has enough money yet where she can stop fracking?
Well, you know what she is, right?
She's a fracking queen. She's a fracking queen.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think, personally, I don't think we've hit peak saturation. I think there is still a little more that can happen before we hit peak saturation. When we finally make it to, like, Drag Race Bulgaria, Drag Race Congo, Drag Race UAE, that's, you know, when we start getting to that point, I think is when I will say we are a little closer to complete saturation of the drag market.
I guess I just don't know at what point it starts to decline. Do you know what I mean? Like, because we know rumors of what's coming soon. And there is a certain thing that we may have alluded to that is coming next year that seems like it's the zenith of Drag Race, at least, if not other spinoff properties. And not to say that it would, you know, preclude any future and like an ongoing sort of thing that they're planning. But this year has been, I mean, I will be quite honest with the audience. I have watched almost none of what we're going to talk about today for decently, you know, not drag related reasons, but still, it's so much. It's so much. I don't know how y'all keep up with it.
I will say that the only one that I haven't kept up with is Italy. I have watched 2 episodes.
And same for me.
I would say I will use non-existent air quotes because, again, podcasting is a visual medium. But I was doing other things, and it is very difficult because you have to read. Like, there are subtitles. Unless you speak fluent Italian, you can't just kind of passively watch it. You have to actively watch. So a lot of what I watched in those 2 episodes was just kind of getting the gist of what was going on here and there, but kind of just paying attention to what the visuals were and not really kind of diving more into really watching it like I did with Holland. I don't know. I think the difference with Drag Race versus some of these other shows, because you've got shows like Survivor, which have international variations. There are other variants to the show. You have Survivor Australia, there's Survivor Romania. And the only reason I partially know that these things even exist is because some of those people have crossed over into another show that I binge watch ridiculously during the beginning of this year in The Challenge. And they've brought some of those contestants from like other Big Brother franchises and Survivor franchises into The Challenge. I think the difference is they want us, at least in the U.S., I don't know about if they push it as hard in other countries, but they really want us to watch all of these variants. And then when RuPaul is involved, they really try to make it Americanized. And I think we'll get to this in a minute when we talk about Drag Race UK season 3. There is a huge push for these other countries' versions of the show when RuPaul is involved to appeal to an American audience. And I think that's a horrible, horrible idea. Because why? We aren't and shouldn't be the main focus of what that version of the show is going for. When España, which I still think is one of the best international versions of the show, they did not give a flying fuck about Americanizing it. The host, the judges, all of the people involved with the show were Spaniards, were all Spanish-based people. The Snatch Game people were all, like, it didn't matter. These were people that the people in the country of origin of this program would enjoy and would find entertaining. Whether, I mean, I don't know if they did or not, because I'm not from Spain, so I don't really know who most of those people were. But we'll dive into this part of it real quick. Snatch Game for Drag Race UK season 3. If RuPaul could have gone around and told one more person to do an American celebrity, and I know that you can say Cher is an American celebrity. She's internationally known, internationally famous and regarded, but she's an American celebrity. These queens don't necessarily you know, Chodisa May isn't a Cher impersonator. She's not good. Like, just because Rue would have a giggle and a laugh at one joke, or it would tickle her, I think that's ruining the feel of these programs when Rue is involved. And that's my take on that.
The final two of the Snatch Game episode were actually the two queens that didn't change their celebrities that RuPaul wanted to.
And which is why they went home. She said, "You did not listen to me. Get the fuck off my show." Mm-hmm. Because there was a lot of eliminations and non-eliminations in a short period of time that did not make sense. But anyhow, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Okay, let's back it up a second. Let's rewind. And okay, so Brian, you said that you haven't watched a lot of the drag programs that have been out this year. Eric, have you been keeping up with the Dragapalooza that is drag programming on American television and streaming platforms?
Yes. So as of this recording, 12/14, I have seen every Drag Race iteration, minus I haven't seen the reunion episode for Canada, and I've only seen two episodes of Italy.
Okay. Which I was surprised. We'll get into Canada. But I like the way that they did that. They made it fresh. They made it fresh. I liked it.
Well, yeah, they said it was going to be the reunion episode, and I thought, oh, well, I don't have to watch this. And then I was pulling up the wiki page, and I was like, oh, they did something.
Oh, so you didn't watch the you must not have caught it in the next time on Canada's Drag Race, because they made a mention. I think Brad, that little portion of the beginning where they're like, the top four is about to become the top three. And I was like, oh, bitch, really?
No, I must have missed
I was
that.
Impressed. Yeah. All right. I am the same as Eric, except I have watched the the reunion, the penultimate episode of Canada's Drag Race. I have been keeping up with everything except for Italy. And I think the only other episode, the only other thing I have not watched was the reunion episode of España. And I heard it was cute and I heard it was delightful in certain ways, but it wasn't. It was a reunion episode that I did not need to watch. And I think I had other stuff going on and just said, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I'll come back to that. So we've on this program, maybe not this program, in this stream, in our feed, we've touched a little bit on Drag Race Down Under. I think we talked about it up right before the end of that season. That flaming pile of trash that it was.
Because, and you already touched on it for UK, but RuPaul tried to take all the Australia and New Zealand out of it and make it all American.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there were a lot of reasons why Drag Race Down Under.
Well, yes, there were a number of things, but she did try to America wash it.
She America washed it. She spoke for the entire black community and forgave blackface. Yep. I see the Scarlet. Oh God, it was Scarlet Adams.
Yes.
That portion of it, I find her apology and her explanation very much lip service. And I don't know her. I don't know what's in her heart. I don't know what she's doing to try to make amends for performing in blackface and for all of that.
I think the main issue was, I'm sure during the casting process, everyone knew about that. And there were conversations had about it. But you can't go through the entire show and not address it, because the fandom will find all that stuff and be like, what the heck? Why did no one know about this? They knew, but they can't spend half an hour getting into the nuances of it. They can only do like a quick 5 second. Are you sorry? I'm sorry. Okay. Black people forgive you.
And then Rue with the biggest boomer energy of going, I'm sure some people would want me to cancel you, but I'm about forgiveness. Rue, No, ma'am. Okay, boomer, is what I felt the rest of the stage should have said. And then you have Karen from finance and the Cupid doll tattoo and collection. I found, and this is me, maybe it's because I like Karen from finance as a character. In reading her apology and like the what's come out from her about the whole thing and her getting rid of the collection, getting the tattoo covered up, like the steps that she's taken feel more genuine. Mm-hmm. Even if it was spurred on by what she's going through in being put into a bigger public spotlight, I still feel like there is a little bit more growth there. But I don't know. Ketamine seemed like a fine enough queen, but was not my favorite. And honestly, that top four, you had Art Simone, who I felt like did not deserve to be back.
was brought back for no reason.
You had Scarlett Adams, who's out there twirling around in blackface and, you know, mocking the Aboriginal people of Australia and New Zealand. You have Karen from finance, who, I mean, I could still see the point of not putting a crown on her because of the you know, her past and her history. And then I guess Ketamine was the only other choice.
Wins by default.
It just, and I mean, she was fine, but it was like the least, it was the most anticlimactic Drag Race finale I've ever seen. And the user ratings reflect that apparently, because it is the lowest rated of any Drag Race franchise that aired this year. We had season 13, which I believe we've chatted about through the finale, or I don't know if we chatted about the finale. But I know that we did have some good conversations about the season. Mm-hmm. With Simone taking the win. I still am a little pissed that I knew that they had to put Simone and Gottmik up against each other in the first round. Because you know that shit is fixed as hell. There is no way they were leaving it to chance. But you had to have Simone or Gottmik take one of the other, like one of them had to get knocked out in the first round. There was no way you were going to have that come to the end and then not crown both of them as a winner at that point. But what was your take and your feel on Simone, the Ebony Enchantress, and her factory winning the crown?
I thought she was fantastic all season. Yeah, I still don't. If there is one thing, I still don't like her entrance outfit from the very beginning of the season. the Polaroid dress. I mean, that was the only thing I could knock her about was just, but that's just personal taste. That's all that is.
Exactly.
Personal, I get the not taste.
I was like, no one's ever called us fashionistas. So, so trust, I get it. I'm the same way. It wasn't my favorite of her looks. She did such amazing things throughout the entirety of the season. But yeah, it was fine, but it didn't feel like a Drag Race workroom entrance outfit. But yeah, I mean, I was happy for Simone too. Like that, I really thought that Mick was going to take it. But Simone, well deserving of the title. And she went on to NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me as the guest one, like 2 weeks after she won. And that tickled me so much. I don't know why when there's drag queens on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, I get so excited, but I do.
Yeah, Simone did a lot of stuff in the public eye. I know. Because RuPaul subbed in for one of the late night hosts. I can't remember which one. But had Simone on and they had a good conversation.
Yeah, and it I've was just nice seen her.
She also, Simone also was in Kacey Musgraves' new video. for her album release.
Was it just her? Or were there a couple of queens? I remember her being in the video. I just can't remember off the top of my head if there were more queens in it or if it was just Simone.
I remember it was just Simone in the group of four girls.
Okay.
But I didn't watch the whole video, so I don't know if like there were cameos.
Gotcha. No. I'm thinking of exactly what you're describing, that like four girl, like them walking down the hall or mall or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the picture. And then we've also had the beginning of the year, we had Drag Race UK season two with Lawrence Chaney as our winner. I know we've talked about that in previous conversations. We've also talked about All-Star 6 and Kylie Sonique Love snatching that crown in an oddly really good season. When I first saw the cast, well before it was announced, I was like, this is not going to be entertaining at all to watch. And it's probably up there with like in the second or third spot for me of All-Star seasons, with All-Star 2 being, you know, obviously the peak all-stariness of All-Star so far.
Yeah, luckily most of the people that I liked made it farther into the season, so I was happy about it.
Yeah, no, it surprised me. And even the queens that I wasn't necessarily there to watch entertained me, and I enjoyed seeing them, and was still happy that Serena Chacha went first, so we didn't have to see her too long. Now I just feel like Willem while talking about her. So we've chatted about all of those. So let's jump into, let's talk Canada's Drag Race. Let's do a little chatter about that. I will say this, I haven't really gotten super invested in this season. And I don't say that to be shady to the queens, because I don't think it's that. I don't know what it is. I haven't connected with the season as much as I think I thought I would have. What are your big takeaways as we enter into the finale coming up this week?
I think there have been some good things about the season that I've liked. But yeah, I would say overall it's not as interesting as the first season. A couple of the queens that I liked didn't end up performing as well as I thought they would. Like, I was sad Beth went home the first episode. Based on the Meet the Queens, I thought she was really interesting. And then Suki Doll left really early in the season. But I really liked her attitude and her runways a lot.
Well, and spoiler alert, she's Miss Congeniality, so.
Oh, goodness. That doesn't surprise me. It would have surprised me if Eve 6000 was Miss Congeniality.
Can I tell you this real quick, since you mentioned Eve 6000? So sure. You remember the band Eve 6, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the lead singer is basically the band now. Like, it's him and I guess, you know, some other musicians, which it always has, but he's running the Twitter account. And I don't know how or why, but somebody must have retweeted in my timeline a comment a tweet that he had posted, and it might have been about Third Eye Blind or something like to that effect. And I started just kind of digging through the tweets. It is the most like shitpostiest Twitter account that I follow, and it's amazing. And it's like super left, like politic wise, and then just like ridiculousness. He's having a quote unquote Twitter feud with Patton Oswalt. Like, it's just ridiculous. But then at one point he changed the display name for the account to Eve 6000 fan account. And I was like,
that's awesome.
And they actually just released a new song. So if you liked Inside Out or their other hit, feel free to go check out New Eve 6. I didn't think I'd be saying that in 2021.
I'll get right on it. Relive the 90s.
Just make sure you don't swallow your pride or choke on a rind.
We also got to see one of the most awkward lip syncs of all history when Kimora Amor did everything but Mimi, I'm First lift geometric on her shoulders. Like, girl, if you want to go home, just go home. Like, what are you doing?
I love that the judges were like, before we announce the winner, we just got to know, what the fuck was that? Possibly in that exact verbiage. Like, I know that they, I feel like they asked what the fuck was that? And it made me laugh so hard because I was like, she's literally just all up in her space, like right staring her in the face instead of lip syncing.
Ugh, it was so awkward. I thought that the makeover episode was really good. Just the way the queens connected to all the kids. I thought that was really nice. And then I think either Isis or Pythia should win.
Okay. Yeah. My kind of what the fuck moment was that clown scene in the Rusical.
Oh.
That Rusical was 93% what the ever-living fuck. What are they doing? And then 7%, wow, this bitch is going to have a singing career at the end of it. Okay, mostly that was just, was it Cynthia Kiss?
Yeah.
I feel like her part was probably about 7% of the Rusical. I mean, she was the main lead, but still. Yeah, it definitely, I'm with you on all of the points that you made. That makeover episode probably was my favorite of the season so far, like, mm-hmm. of this season, because it really did humanize and show a different side of some of the queens. And Drag Race is, in most iterations, has taken on, I think since season 9 of US Drag Race, has taken on a very after school special. The more you know, on a very special episode feel in a lot of them, because they have to get these things out to the audience. Let's talk about pronouns. Let's talk about, you know, the struggles that we went through in coming out. Let's talk about how I was a drug addict. You know, like, mm-hmm. that conversation and the young kid that Isis made over when she had talked about being all alone, you know, as being a young trans kid. And then, like, Isis kind of breaking down and in the confessional talking about the addiction and kind of being at that point of ODing to try to take her life. That was really moving and really touching and didn't feel a special episode-ish. It felt very authentic and genuine and somebody just connecting and, you know, the whole, you'll never be alone again. I will give you my number, you know. You will always have somebody to talk to and to call. That was genuine and felt real versus, hey, so how have you done this before? Like, you know when the producers are prompting a conversation.
Yeah.
So I honestly, I think Pythia should win from an artistic standpoint. I don't know. I don't really have a favorite. I don't have a horse in this race on who should win.
Do you have a centaur in the race?
I might have a centaur in the race. It makes me think of Xanadu, the musical, because that's kind of like the same look, just in pink, from yeah. when the centaur comes out in the production. But Pythia's outfits have been on fucking point and amazingly stellar. Like... Mm-hmm. If you haven't really been watching, but you want to see some really creative drag, check out Pythia's runway looks from Canada's Drag Race Season 2. Let's hop across the pond. Let's talk Druck 3. Woohoo!
Oh, goodness. I liked some of the episodes, I think. Yeah.
I think. Sounds about right.
Let's see here. I felt bad for Veronica Green because everything that came out about her story after the fact has just been horrible about how she feels she shouldn't have come back that season. And it's understandable. I mean, she was broke and it was a hard time all around for anybody to get work. And the expectation when you're coming back to a second season is that you're just going to be so much more elevated than the first time around. And she just wasn't able to produce garments that would have shown that.
Well, because when you spend that much money to be on a season, have a pandemic breakout, and you're already, you know, not able to work, getting sent home from production, not able to work, and then you get sick, and then you have no money, and you can't use, you've spent, let's say, $30,000. You don't have that to redo an entire package, and the prompts aren't going to be the same. So the outfits that you had made for the prompts for season two won't match season three. So you can't bring those. So yeah, it's just shit luck on that. And I understand her wanting to come back because you didn't get a chance to finish
it
out.
Like,
yeah. But for it to come around again that quickly, like that really sucked. I really do hope that once there's a point where she's able to kind of replenish where she's at and get a better foothold with everything, and then maybe an All-Stars or something, I hope that she gets a chance to kind of get a little bit of that redemption, just maybe in her own mind. Like, I don't think she did horrible. I feel for her, and I know that she probably is kicking herself for not living up to her own standard, and I would like to see her get a little bit of redemption for that.
Yeah, and I think overall production just didn't know what to do storyline wise, after Victoria went home, because I think she was going to be the bulk of their storyline most of the season, and her getting injured just kind of threw all that out the window. And with how quick the turnaround was on production to airing, it was kind of tough.
I mean, they filmed in 10 days, so.
Allegedly.
Don't get Bussy Queen to start saying that we're propagating rumors and lies over here on our podcast. Although maybe we get some more listeners from that.
I liked Theresa May. She was definitely the voice of the producers for as long as she was on, because she was always the one who asked the very pointed question to get the ball rolling. And it was phrased in the exact way that the producer would have told her.
Yeah.
That's. I thought Charity Case got a little bit of a raw deal. I think the producers probably cast her to be this wild and different person, but RuPaul and Michelle just did not like it. And I feel that's a little rough for her. I don't think she was appreciated the way she should have been.
I can see that for sure. Not my cup of tea when it comes to drag, but extremely creative and immensely talented. So yes. Yeah, I definitely think it was a bit of a raw deal. What would have been really funny is if they had shown the alleged altercation between her and RuPaul on film.
Even read about that.
Oh, so I think it was the double Shantae episode. So the first time that she and Scarlett.
Yep.
Like, I don't remember which Scarlet is. I was going to say Scarlet Bobo, but that was Canada season one.
So many Scarlets.
Scarlet Harlot. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah, we had no Scarlets until we had... shit, who's the Envy. Drama? Envy.
Yeah.
Is it me? Am I the drama?
Am I the drama?
So when Scarlet Harlot and Charity Case first lip synced, or I guess before they lip synced, she had gotten critiqued harshly, and I guess was her mic was still hot, and said allegedly said something about, oh, I don't need this fucking show. If I was good enough for Vogue, you know, I should be good enough for the show. I don't need this fucking show. Like, whatever. Like, just kind of shit talking the show. And I guess it got back to Rue, or Rue listened to it. And then when they came back out, she was like, if you don't need my fucking show, then you can leave. Apparently, this whole thing. Yeah. And then she, you know, saved her only to eliminate her the following week.
And that was weird because I don't think that should have been a double Shantae, because the next week was a better lip sync for both of the queens. And it was just so weird.
Yeah, absolutely. But then when they sent Victoria home, they sent Veronica home in that episode. I think that was episode 3. And like, why did you need to send anybody home on that episode? You could have just left it be, well, with Veronica being eliminated, we're not going to send anybody home. And then, like, it just, there were so many choices. There were so many choices that were made that did not make sense in the way that the show broke down. It was just...
like, I don't think Teresa should have been sent home in the double sachet. I thought it was a serviceable enough lip sync to stay.
I mean, it was bad.
It wasn't good. That wig she was trying to do something with was...
well, and then you've got... yeah, that. I mean, it was bad. I can't even use the word good. I can't even use not good. It was bad. And I didn't watch it. Again, I tend to kind of zone out and do other things while I'm watching television. So when I saw it the second time around and watched her fuck with that wig for as long as she did, I was like, at that point, just fucking take the wig off. Like,
yeah,
you're still going to go home.
I mean, River's already taken off every piece of drag she has on. So
they both didn't know what to do with themselves. And they were not in outfits that were conducive to them for lip syncing. And it did not work well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I have a question.
Sure. Yes.
So I did watch some of this season, so at least I'm sort of following and mostly aware of what you're talking about. And then the rest of the time, I'm just kind of like, my mind is wandering so I don't get spoiled, you know, because I guess I care about that. Not really, I don't know.
For the 14 seasons of Drag Race you are behind on.
Listen, it's just three. I realize as we're talking, I did watch like the first episode of, Spagna. Oh, shoot. No, I never watched any of Italy. Either way, it doesn't matter. I watched some of UK because I like the UK stuff. I also like the Canada stuff, so I'm kind of like excited to watch that. But UK, like overall, was this one of the ones where you feel like they really tried to lean too much into the Americanizing it? Or did they Because I know in the first season, I felt like at least they seemed to kind of hew back to these very British and English, UK, you know, themes and cultural references. Did you not feel that way for this third season?
On the roast episode, when Rue was doing her walk around, she told four queens to switch to an American celebrity.
Oof.
A okay. Snatch Game, you mean?
Yes, for Snatch Game.
Yeah. Got it. Well, I mean,
were there only six
Scarlet
people?
Harlot, the what?
Oh, no. Scarlet. She told Chariza. Is it River?
Yep. And Elevide.
Okay.
Well, I think she coached Elevide. Like, Ella wasn't sure which one to pick. And then I think she pushed her towards Nigella.
Yeah. And I mean, not necessarily all American celebrities. Yeah. But like, when you tell Theresa May, you should do Cher. It's like, well, what? And it in the phrasing and the verbiage that Rue uses is, well, it should appeal to, you know, people around the world are going to see this. And they may not know who this person is if it's. It's like her telling Tia Coffey that her drag is too regional. And I get that it's on a worldwide platform in WoW Presents Plus, but it's still fucking WoW Presents Plus. It's not like this is on goddamn Paramount Plus right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This is a very...
It's a BBC show. It's...
Yeah, it's a very niche market. Like, just let us enjoy these queens having a good fucking time doing what they're doing. I don't know who Gemma Collins is. I mean, I know the name because it's been said, you know, multiple times in the three seasons that have been on when Cheryl Hole did Gemma on season one. But Kitty Scott Claus was fantastic in that role. Oh, she pushed Kitty back to doing Gemma because Kitty was going to do somebody else. And she was like, just do Gemma Collins. Because everybody except for River and Theresa did what Rue said.
Yeah.
Basically, essentially saying, if you don't bite the hand that's feeding you, you will stay on the show. And the two people who didn't do it were the ones who went home.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. But ended up with Scarlet Harlot being Macaulay Culkin and just screaming for every answer. That was...
And a more and more annoying high-pitched scream. A different, more annoying high-pitched scream each time.
Mm-hmm. I think overall, Ella definitely had the best track record, but she kind of flailed in the finale.
The final runway and lip sync. Because in the finale, she did well in the challenge, but she bombed the second half.
Yeah.
And I wanted Ella to win. Ella was my horse in that race.
Kitty was mine. I love a comedy queen. I mean, Ella was great, but...
I was worried that they weren't going to put somebody as similar to Lawrence in the same, like, in the same year as, you know, as the winner.
I understand that.
And I mean, Rue had the biggest fucking boner for Crystal from episode one, and it was nauseating. And then her story went nowhere. Like, her story was meh for the rest of it while they elevated Ella and Kitty. And then you get to the end and it's like, well, fuck all of your growth. Fuck your drag. And Crystal, here's a crown. And it's like, okay.
Well, it's kind of like what happened last year because Lawrence was great in the first half of the season. And then after the break, Bimini came back and kind of swept the second half of the season, but it still went to Lawrence.
Yeah, but Lawrence had had an arc. And even at the low moments, they still made it a good story. Crystal's low moments, like there was only kind of one humanizing moment, and that was in Bra Wars. Horrible challenge, by the way. The girls did well, but god damn, they have even worse writers over in the UK. But it didn't seem like there was any real story behind it. It was like, look at how amazing she is in episodes one and I guess in two?
And really, her second bad should have been the third episode, but they couldn't give her three in a row.
I mean, they could have, but then obviously everybody would have stopped watching because they'd have been like, oh, okay, well, Crystal's going to win, which we all said from episode two when they gave her two badges back to back in two episodes. But anyway, yeah, I was not happy with that, how that all played out. I liked some of the queens. I don't think there was really any queen in this cast that I was not a, like, I didn't like. But yeah, I did not, I was not a fan of how this series ended. For sure. All right. So from there, we mentioned Italy. We haven't really watched it ourselves. Any hot takes on Italy as a franchise?
I think I like all the judges. It's hard to tell sometimes. Just because gotcha. You don't get references or cultural like themes and that kind of stuff to understand. But they seem to have really good interaction with the queens, which is good. I feel that some of the contestants are pretty samey-samey. So, like, coming into this, if I wasn't looking at their names and pictures, I would be confused who was who. Other than LaQuisha and Ivana. And I really don't necessarily
understand. Did you say LaQuisha Kiana? No, the new head cheerleader from Shakespeare?
Totally. no, LaQuisha and Ivana.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yes. I don't necessarily know why they're really pushing Norma to be the villain of the season, but that's happening. Like, she must
is
have
it her. Is she the drama?
Apparently, and she must have worked with most of these queens because they, oof, some of the workroom banter is pretty rough. I think Larish is my favorite so far.
Okay.
Of the two episodes I've seen.
So let me ask this. Do you know, is the hot daddy that usually comes in with the pit crew, is that the drag queen main
that's
judge host?
Is that Priscilla? Is that her
okay.
name?
Okay. Yeah, Priscilla.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
She keeps trying to be a pit crew member, and they're like, no.
I'm like,
you're old and you're a judge.
You're old. You're supposed to be hosting the show. Get over here. Because, yeah, that's like the weirdest part about it. Like, and it's kind of the same with Canada. I get having this ensemble a little bit, but at the same time, it's so weird because it tonally doesn't have consistency, because not each of these judges who come in and present a mini challenge and the main challenge have that same vibe. So, lover or hater, Rue as the host, presenter, judge, it brings a consistency to the program where sometimes, like Canada especially, like, because there's three different people besides Brooklyn, because there's the Tracy
right,
Melchior, Amanda Bruegel, Brad Goreski, and Brooklyn.
Yes.
Because Amanda and Tracy will switch out depending on the week. Right.
Which that's just like Carson and Ross.
Yeah, but you don't see Ross and Carson coming in and like doing a mini challenge with the girls or like presenting the, like, if that was the case, like if Rue came in 1 week, Carson came in 1 week, Michelle came in 1 week, Ross came in 1 week, like their energies are all so different that there would be a, I don't know, like maybe it's just because I'm so used to a bajillion seasons of US Drag Race that I like that tone.
I think part of it is RuPaul not wanting Brooklyn to think she is RuPaul.
True, but no, because Espana and Holland, their head judges were the only ones that came into the workroom and presented the right. challenges and all that.
Yes.
See, right now it's just Canada and Italy that have done it.
But
I definitely could see that.
But the international ones where RuPaul is not, those are very experienced queens who I guess in that country hold like the same kind of place in pop culture as RuPaul does in the US.
Maybe. But I mean, but if Italy is like, so Italy and Canada are doing it, but Holland and Spain aren't. So like, maybe it's, maybe that's going to kind of be the direction that any of these new international spinoffs will have. It'll be that panel of judges and they'll rotate through. It probably also means that they pay less because they're not having to do more
as much
in each episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to understand the politics of the network hosting that drag race locally and how much they're contributing to versus how much WoW, Fenton Bailey and all the, that gang, you know, how much they dictate and the cost associated. So like, it always baffled me that Rue wasn't doing more with Canada. You know, anecdotally, she doesn't like to fly, but it's like, well, Canada, you may not have to even fly that far, at least, if at all. But like, it's just interesting to see the various permutations. And I think part of it's really, it's got to be dictated by the network that they're partnering with. You know, BBC had one set of requirements, whereas, you know, whoever, you know, airs Italy or Spain or Holland or Holland, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like they have their own requirements and budgets. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that is what's dictating it. But I absolutely love the way that España and Italy did it with having their own local legendary queens. Because, like, God, you just want this to live on, you'd think. And Rue can't be everywhere. And it shouldn't just be Rue. It should be these leaders of their own drag communities, even Brooklyn in Canada. I mean, you know, there are other more legendary, you know, people they could have probably gone to, but I don't know. I really would love to be the fly on the wall. Well, no,
they Brooklyn actually, is the queen of the North. So.
No. Well, yes, very much
with
so.
Her tiny flag and her bedazzled Mountie hat.
They featured that one queen whose name escapes me, who, I mean, admittedly is probably too old. Maybe.
Oh, the oldest working drag queen in Canada.
Yeah, but I think she wasn't
not
just
Darcelle
that.
In the U.S.
Yeah, right. She's like legend in Canadian drag. Like, I mean, I applaud them for even showcasing them, you know, at one point. But anyway, all I'm saying is I would love to read the tell-all about how these projects came about, you know, what were the requirements from the studios. Like, I just really want to know that detail because I think it explains so much of these questions that we're trying to, you know, piece together from just watching, you know.
So I think, and this is only piecing it together through anecdotal evidence, but the UK was the first one that wanted to do its own version. And originally Rue was not going to be involved. The like kind of the production team that was going to do it. It was going to be one of those where, you know, obviously World of Wonder would be a producer on it, but I think there was someone else that wanted to do it and was going to have another queen be like the judge, the host, judge, whatever. But I think when they, but it didn't, it kept on getting pushed back. I think what it is UK and Australia are places that Rue loves to be a part of and loves the culture. And I think that's why Rue is involved in those two franchises, because that's where, like, that's the ones she wants to be a part of. I think when you have Canada and you've got Holland and Spain and, you know, these other variants that are a part of the franchise now, I don't think those are her top picks of places to go.
And well, also, could you imagine how long each episode would be if they had to have a translator?
Oh my God. Bitch, Michelle had to translate Bell End. Is a punchline in UK season 2. I think that's what started it. I think that's the point where Rue was like, we need to Americanize all of this shit because you all are saying words and jokes that I don't understand. And when RuPaul doesn't understand it, that's when it's a problem. If it's not funny to RuPaul, then it's a problem. And I think that's where it became, let's Americanize the ones I'm a part of.
Yeah, no, I feel like there is a... Like, there's that angle, which makes total sense, but there's also the idea that, yeah, we are trying to make this content that is going to sell to more than your country. And networks that want to share those expenses hear that and go, well, that means it's cheaper for us. You know what I mean? Like World of Wonder, I assume, or maybe there's some kind of profit splitting. I don't know. Like, would make more money if it was content that was more universally understood. And yeah. So all of that, I am so intensely fascinated by. I know Willem does their very best to recount that for us anecdotally as well. But I would just love someday when all the NDAs have expired, when Rue is passed on from this mortal coil. Like, I would just love to know the true dirt about how all of this came together. It would be anyway, so interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely would be. All of the shit that goes on behind the scenes would definitely be amazing to get to hear those stories for sure. Let's take a quick jump over to Dracula. Just kidding. We're not doing Dracula.
No, I actually watched that. No, I'm just kidding. I have not watched it.
I haven't watched it because I don't have a Shudder account and I refuse to add another one on.
That's my problem. Otherwise, I would actually really want to watch that.
The last thing before we jump into the new queens that are entering the kingdom in 2022 is Queen of the Universe.
Oh, yeah.
Eric, have you watched?
I have. It's very fun. I like it.
Queen of the Universe. I'm telling you, it's just stuck in my head. And it makes me want to meet Vanessa Williams more and more every time I see her on that screen. She's a goddamn national treasure, and I love her so. So what did you think of... I did not expect them to drop two episodes in the beginning.
Yeah,
or
honestly,
to cut half the cast.
Right. Like, honestly, I watched the first episode and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to tell next Wednesday. And then the day after, I found out, oh, they aired two episodes. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I have to watch the second one then.
You cut that shit early. You don't stick around. You were like, this show is over. I'm out. Gotta go.
Exactly. I liked the representation, the worldly representation for the most part. Except, okay, you're filming this in the UK. You only have one UK queen on it, but you pick five American queens.
Well, because it's still an American show, even if it's from being filmed in the UK. The World of Wonder was like, yeah, we're just gonna pull heavily from the United States. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, three of the judges are American, so right there.
Yeah,
but still, I thought most of the cuts. Most of the first cut were probably the right ones to cut. I felt really bad for Jujubee.
I know. Oh my god!
But when she sang that song, and then looking at the rest of the performances, it was like
it didn't match up at all.
No. And I felt so bad for her.
Because she didn't sound bad, but the performance was so lackluster. And that outfit.
Yeah. I didn't know what she was thinking with that outfit. Yeah.
Oh my god. That was, I'm going to go and perform a hot spot at a club and do this one number. And then I'm going to drink the rest of the night for free. That's what that outfit was. That was not I'm performing on a world stage in this drag queen singing competition outfit.
Yeah. And... I was glad that they only kept two of the American queens. Although those weren't the two I probably would have picked. I would have kept Ada Vox.
She did stay.
Yeah, no, I like
her. Gotcha. But I was like, wait a minute.
But I wouldn't have chosen Aria. Mm-hmm. I would have probably chosen Cheyenne. I think she gave a much more powerful.
The Cheyenne,
I don't
Valentino?
Know if you know her. Yeah. I don't know if you know her because she's from Chicago. So I don't know if you've seen her.
Anyway, bitch, I'm from Chicago.
But I also really preferred the New York Queen Novaskar to Aria's performance. But that was just me and me being a Britney Spears fan.
Gotcha.
Probably. I thought Montante, the yodel, was incredible. She wasn't as good the second episode. But Ronnie was amazing, the Indian queen.
Yeah, I liked her.
And let's see here. And Jinzilla is my other kind of favorite one.
Oh, Jinzilla?
Yeah, from Australia. And Lavois is okay. I mean,
I saw a red wig in a silver dress.
I don't think.
I tweeted that after that first night, the double episode premiere. I tweeted out a red wig in a silver dress, hashtag I think not, and I tagged Davina and Lavois, and Lavois liked it, awesome. And it made me laugh. I was like, yes.
That's awesome. But yeah, I like that it's a very efficient show. As far as they're just knocking those numbers out, they're giving a little bit of a story to each queen, a little bit of story time, but for the most part, they're just knocking them out. I wish the judges might get a little more time to talk, but for the most part, I think it's fine, and I like it as a concept. It'll be interesting when they say, okay, what about AFAB queens? Okay, what about trans queens?
No, well, yeah, for sure. And I mean, I like the concept. I like the production value. And it's been fun so far. So I'm excited to see it. Mm-hmm. See it progress. Okay, so that's pretty much a wrap on talking about the drag that's happened this year or currently happening, getting ready to wrap up soonish. But we've got 14 new dolls and divas that are sauntering into the Drag Race Kingdom January 7th, 2022, with season 14 of RuPaul's Drag Race. We had a very Candyland themed preview. We had an arcade-style full reveal, Meet the Queens. There were claw machines and candy bars and game pieces of plenty. So let us do a quick first thoughts, hot takes on the season 14 Queens. I'm sure that once we get a little bit more into the season, maybe we'll even try to get Ginger Minj back on bring back our lovely chats about new seasons with our favorite Orlando Drag Race queen. But Brian, did you have a chance to peruse the 14 dolls that are sashaying their way into the workroom?
No, I actually did. I think I was out of the country when this all came up, and it caught my attention, surprisingly. And I was like, oh, wow, we're already there. I didn't know how much of a break there'd be, you know, and we haven't had an American Drag Race in a while. So, you know, but anyway, so yeah, January, and I saw the list of queens, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I don't know any of these people. I've never heard of any of them, except for one. I was very excited. We have, after a long absence, we have a Seattle-based queen in the mix. One that I have not gotten to see personally, mostly because of the pandemic. But, you know, I've heard good things. Actually, I was already following them on Instagram, I found out, because I kind of went through a collect them all phase, all the local queens here in Seattle. But Bosco is the queen from Seattle who will be competing. I don't entirely know how to describe their look. It's art forward but elegant, I guess. Does that sound about right?
Sure. I haven't looked at these queens.
Well, I'm looking at the promo. I've also, like I said, I followed her on Instagram, and so I her looks are varying from elegance to pretty out there sometimes. Maybe with a slightly goth twinge at moments, but overall I think very, very mixed styles. So anyway, so Bosco is the only one I'm really overly or at all familiar with. I don't know. Did you guys know any of these other queens from any other areas or shows that you've seen?
I did not, and I really haven't watched the Meet the Queens yet. Other than I saw a little bit of cornbreads, because everybody's been talking about cornbread as kind of their preseason pick that people are rooting for. But I liked her. I liked her promo look. I liked her announcement look or reveal, whichever. As far as the promo look, I'm also drawn to Willow Pill, Lady Camden, Deja Sky, and Metamorphosis, which may be problematic for me.
Canceled.
I know.
Canceled.
Yeah, let's I mean, okay, so yeah, let's
we're I'm gonna, sure we're that's going to come up later, but
we're going to talk about Maddie, I have a feeling, but before that, Pat, what about you? Who did you who stood out?
I don't know any of them, and it's the first time in a long time that I don't know any of them. And the funnier part is Chrissy, who doesn't watch the show but knows so many of the girls from 20 plus years of working at the Parliament House and being in the world of drag. And he only knows one, and that's Georges, who is a tiny little firecracker of fun. And 21 from Nashville. And I love that he just utilized Jorge in a different way. And at Barrioke this past Sunday, one of my singers, George, anytime he would come up, because of Race Chaser, I would go... looking good, feeling gorgeous, and it just makes me giggle. None of them, like a lot of them, have amazing looks. I think all of their looks are pretty damn cool. Nobody is 100% like sticking out to me. It is worth noting that both Cornbread and Kerry Colby are trans women who are now on the show, so that is phenomenal. And I love the fact that it was such a vocal, like, trans women deserve to be on the show. And then they cast two, and there is little to no talk about it, because all of the talk switches to Metamorphosis, who is a cisgender heterosexual male who does drag. And the conversation of, does he belong on the show, have been taking over the internet.
I just, this hurts my heart so much, right? Because we all talk this game of inclusivity, inclusion. And while it is obvious that cis male white, you know, we're not in the cultural dominance that we had enjoyed for probably most of recorded history. And that's great. I'm fine with that. Please don't ever mistake that. However, like the fact that one heterosexual cisgender white male is included and everyone loses their shit. It's just like, oh, I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I canceled? Please tell me.
I mean, you've been canceled a long time.
That's true. Oral canceled me first.
because was it one of the UK queens on the first season?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was bisexual?
Mm-hmm. But that's still LGBTQIA plus.
I understand that. and I will say that as far as I know, as far as what I've seen on social media and such, that he got into it because his girlfriend is a drag queen. And I haven't gone out and tried to search out what the fandom is saying. I've more been listening to or seeing social media posts from queens who they don't have the opinion or they don't have this hate or ire that she was cast on the show. It seems to be coming from the fan base itself, which it's not the first time that the fan base has been problematic and certainly will not be the last.
Oh, my God. So much.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Like, so I know we reference it a lot, but, you know, we listened to Race Chaser and they talked about the season 14 reveal. And Willem was very vocal about the fact that, you know, it's tough because through a majority of modern history, straight, mostly white people, men have been given the roles that LGBTQIA performers should get because that's the character that they're playing. And then you have a program which does have a worldwide audience, is a large show, but it is still a small queer space. You know, you only have 14 people per run that are on there. And it's tough because, you know, maybe there should have been another LGBTQIA person who took that spot. And when you give it to somebody who is a heterosexual, cisgender, you know, man, it takes away from, you know, it's that history of straight white men taking away roles and things that an LGBTQIA person should have gotten. But at the same time, it's drag, and it's, you know, if you're doing drag and it's being done in a respectful and coming from a place of passion and compassion and wanting to give back to the community, you know, I mean, we have allies for a reason. Like, I know that they don't technically, although some people like to throw another A in there and say it's for allies, I don't think that allies fall under the acronym. Personally, cancel me if you want, but I don't personally believe.
No,
believe
I thought
that
it was ace. I thought A has been asexual.
There's like 14 different A's that they try to throw in there at some time, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But some people will say, like, if you look it up, some people will say that the A, if there's not two, that there's, you know, that the A is for ally and not for asexual. Whatever it is. I don't personally feel that it needs to be there. If you're an ally, you can be an ally that is, you're not a part of the community. You are there to help support and uplift it. So you don't need to be a part of our acronym at that point in time. But I see both sides of the argument and honestly kind of fall in the middle. And maybe that gets me canceled because I'm not taking a side either which way, but I don't think this is a fight or an argument that needs to rage on within the community. I don't think this is a fight that needs to be fought. You can say it, you can have opinions about it, and if that voice and that thought is echoed and they realize, hey, you know what, maybe we shouldn't do this again, then cool. Okay. Like, that's where it lands. If it starts becoming overrun with, you know, straight white men putting on a dress and makeup, maybe then that's a problem.
But yeah, I think you're exactly right. That is the discriminator, is if this was the default, if this was the dominant, if this was what the show was doing, if they even made their own spinoff that was like, hey, it's straight drag. Wait, didn't they do that?
Wait, Secret Celebrity Drag Race?
Yeah.
Secret Celebrity would drag you, right? Most of those.
Well, drag you was straight women, and the majority of the contestants on Secret Celebrity Drag Race were not part of the queer community. There were some, but not all.
Right. So we've already done this. It's just that in this case, a drag queen, and let's just put it out there, drag, and I'm going to say this because I know Rue says this all the time, and I'm not saying Rue is by any means the person we want necessarily representing the whole community at all. Like, you know, they can't really do that. And she's got her issues. But drag is for everyone. Like, you know, we're all born naked and the rest is drag.
Right. There you go. I was like, I was waiting for it.
I was fishing for it. My brain was working.
All born naked and the rest is drag.
So if we're going to preach this and we're going to say that we are inclusive as opposed to the people who we rail against and who come attack us, we have to embrace that anyone, straight, gay, queer, pan, whatever, sexuality, and then every other part of the community, like, that all of it is valid. And if you want to be a drag performer, it does not matter. And I hope people booking, I mean, again, I want there to be, I love the idea that there are BIPOC drag shows and that there are spaces where it is really celebrating the parts of the community that have been vastly overlooked historically. 100% support that all across sport. But we can't then turn around and be like, everybody has to do this all the time. We can't ever allow for these other options, these other possibilities, these other parts of society. It's just, to me, it's hypocrisy. We have to be inclusive. So well, I don't know. I want to see what they do, or he does, or she does. That pronouns get interesting too, even though they should be the same. So I guess it's she. And I love everything. Like we said, her social media, everything she's saying is such fierce allyship that she's a great role model for the rest of the hetero allies out there who are interested in being a part of our, you know, our spaces and communities. So I this is the example we want to set, right? We should embrace it. But
it'll just be unfortunate because she is going to be the one to get all the hate rained down on her when it really it if somebody has that strong of feelings, it should go to production.
Yeah. Although I will say that I do love the jokes and the memes that have come out of it. And I think Maddie has even posted a bunch of them on her social media. Things such as, finally, we're going to get that lip sync of Mr. Brightside we've all been waiting for. And what are they going to do? Hand her a Miller Lite during Untucked? I was like, these are some... These are great. These are amazing jokes, and I fucking love it. But yeah, I it'll be interesting to see. And if she's a fierce performer, then good on her. And you know, yeah, I it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. So with that being said, we have chatted about a lot of drag today. We are definitely going to be revisiting season 14. Once we've had a little bit more experience with this cast in live action starting January 7th. So check it out on live television because it is not on WoW Presents Plus in the US. We're like the other countries where it's like Drag Race Italia available on WoW Presents Plus, except in Italy. So check it all out. Make sure that you follow and support the queens that you like. Do not send hate to the ones you do not like. And yeah, like Eric said, if you have really strong feelings about casting and production, direct those in eloquently well-stated letters to the production. Don't rail off against these queens on their social media who have nothing to do with it other than sending in a tape. With that being said, thank you for joining me, Brian and Eric, in this conversation. Thank you to all of our dear listeners out there. Check out our social media and website at flameonshow.com. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/flameonshow. And we'll see y'all in two more weeks for our final episode of 2021, our year in review pop culture roundup extravaganza. And where we say goodbye to 2021 and hello to a fabulous new year. So until then, peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.